Sir, I need to know where I can get some business hammocks.
Hammocks? My goodness, what an idea.
Why didn't I think of that? Hammocks!
Homer, there's four places. There's the Hammock Hut. That's on Third.
Uh-huh.
There's Hammocks or Us.
That's it.
On Third, too. You got Put Your Butt There.
Mm-hmm.
That's on Third.
Yeah.
Swing Low, Sweet Chariot.
Right.
Matter of fact, they're all in the same complex. It's the Hammock Complex down on Third.
Oh, the Hammock District.
TBTL.
Are you on the internet? Isn't that for techno geeks with spreadsheets?
You know, what happened next was, you know, they'd open their mouth, they'd speak, they'd get laughed at, they'd get called Polacks.
I'm not very good with chit-chat. I like a structured communication. I like a hard out. You know, chit-chat. Where are we going with that?
That was great. That was good. You went for it. I appreciate that.
Mike, if they do good, put it on YouTube. If they do bad, cancel it.
Well, hello, good morning, and welcome, everybody, to a Tuesday edition of TBTL.
Okay, let's do it.
The show that just might be too beautiful to live. My name's Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
You get goofy in fights, making a mess out of evenings, and the beat goes on.
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City, where it is not raining, people.
Oh, Ma. Pa, it's just beautiful.
It has been torrential up here the last week or so. I mean, just constant driving, hours of rain. And today, it's not doing that. It's cloudy, but at least it's not actively raining, and I will take it. You know what else I'm taking this morning? Coffee that is overly strong. Remember yesterday on the program, I was just eyeballing out the amount of coffee to go into the machine, and I went too hard, maybe even too ham, as the young people might say. And yesterday I was amped up. I was like, this is too much. But now that's my new standard. I have to do that just to feel something.
You can now eat your coffee cup. You heard that right.
So I'm once again flying high on too much caffeine here on episode 3185 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
Oh, I almost set the house on fire yesterday.
Oh my God! We're having a fire sale!
I don't mean that, like, figuratively. Like I was, you know, rocking out with my my blues rock band and we really set the house on fire. I mean, I did something that could have set Burbank Springs on fire. And I blame a fancy piece of design, which we'll talk about coming up. Also, the world's sexiest turtle is retiring from sexing up other turtles at age 100.
I like turtles.
It's actually a tortoise. Is that a different thing? I've done a minimal amount of research on this. That's not true. I read this BBC story about it, about Diego, a giant Galapagos tortoise. So we'll talk about that. And also, Jeopardy is now officially out of new episodes. Because of the pandemic. They had some, you know, in the pantry, if you will, in the digital larder. And there's a move afoot to have them just play all of Ken Jen's episodes, all like whatever it is, 74 or so episodes in a row, just to fill, since they can't really do the regular show for a while. So we'll see what happens with that. Plus, we'll do emails and V-mails, and we'll talk to this guy, the longest running Cobro of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships. He is working on developing a whole new brand.
Slightly sarcastic, good-looking, but non-threatening chummy guy.
He's Andrew Walsh, and he's joining me right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my friend.
That is totally my new brand. I love that drop. That's mm-hmm. the best drop you've ever played of me, although I sound like I'm in a tin can. Can you play that again?
Really?
Do I have sound quality?
Slightly
issues?
Sarcastic, good-looking, but non-threatening chummy guy.
I guess there's a little echo on there. It didn't jump out at me at first. This is like, you know, we both have all of our little personal insecurities about things on the show. I think one of yours is that the offices of Walsh, Walsh, and Doormat are echoey. Because ever since
we came
back from the TBTL-a-thon, dude, I have like at least four or five different, I have a bunch of different band tapestries you can hang. I've got one from Kansas. I've got Electric Light Orchestra. I mean, you can basically fix your whole room up with just like cool tapestries that depict various bands from the 80s and 90s.
We talked about this off air, and I don't mean to get cranky on air with you, but yeah, you have a lot of tapestries. Not one of them is a Grateful Dead tapestry. You don't have one.
Well, that's
Oaks
the thing.
Moksa,
I like to, you know, I've always got to kind of do my own thing. Is that the name of that skeleton thing?
It's close. As that was coming, it's not Oaks of Moksa. I don't know.
Well, I'll write it down though.
I don't know what it. What is I? Wait, no, maybe it is Oaks of Moksa. I think I'm pronouncing it incorrectly, but anyway. Yeah, sorry.
That
I was going to list off
has
some...
a name.
Actually, I don't even know if that's true. That might
you
be a different
You know the worst part,
symbol.
Andrew? The reason that I took what felt like an endlessly long pause there was because I couldn't remember the name of the band Rush, which just would seem like the ultimate... Like, when I was a kid, you'd go over to someone's house, and their older brother would have some weird blanket hanging up. Like in the basement, like in their, like there was a point in most of my life and my friends' lives where their older brother would just take over the basement. They'd just be like, this is my room now.
Mm-hmm.
Or like some unfinished part of the basement. Do you have any friends that lived in an unfinished section of the basement?
Oh, God. Well, I sort of, that was kind of me in the unfinished section as a little kid down there with my Archie comic books. I was allowed to sleep down there during the summertime. So my friend
uh-huh.
Tony. He was like the ultimate. Like
Fred Oaks of Moksa.
He always had a basement room that he would always turn into like kind of a studio. So many tapestries, so much incense, so many musical instruments and electronic toys. And he just was the coolest.
Yeah, I just feel like there was a lot of Rush being represented. Speaking of bands that use skeletons prominently, right? Isn't that kind of, I mean, you got the Roll the Bones video, which we've talked about way more than a podcast in 2020 ever should.
Yeah.
But isn't that like part of the iconography of Rush? Or am I confusing them with an Iron Maiden or a Quiet? Well, Quiet Riot was the guy in the mask, I think. But
my guess is I don't know. And I know we actually do have some fans of Rush in the audience, and I'll let them weigh in on this. But my guess is hardcore Rush fans don't think of Roll the Bones as the symbol of their band. My guess is you're at a Rush dinner party. You're not talking about Roll the Bones all that much. I don't know, though.
Sure. No, you're probably right. I mean, they're considered prog rock. And by the way, I'm looking at them like almost zero skeletons represented. Lots of like stuff that reminds me a little bit of like Led Zeppelin of the era. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the cover of Houses of the Holy.
That's the one with
which
the,
is like
by the river.
Kids.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like kids are like climbing up like a
rocks.
Looks
by
like
the
they're
river,
like Q-Bert. Like I'm looking at an album cover from Rush that's called, and I just want to apologize to, it's Hemispheres, and it's like somebody is like standing on a brain. They look kind of like David Bowie, but they're all glowy and they're pointing at a guy in like a admiral's hat from the British Navy. You know. But zero skeletons, so I take that back. And Rush heads, please hold your fire. I apologize for not being able to think of your band name when I was trying to reference how we could soundproof Andrew's room. On the subject of which...
There's no river.
Why don't you...
I just wanted to say that, though. I've had that Led Zeppelin, House of the Holy record, like, since eighth grade. It was probably my favorite record by them, and it is all these kids on rocks, but I always thought there was a river runs through it. Mm-hmm. There isn't.
Oh, that's your Enya record.
Yes.
Wait, no, sorry. That's Far and Away.
A River Runs Through It, I think, was a movie. But anyway, my apologies for correcting you and saying there's a river in there when that is something my brain has just been making up for 40 years.
Mm, God. Dude, Houses of the Holy, that is... Talk about an album. How about that?
How about that?
Just front to back. Like, I got that CD from Columbia House. And, I mean, it was just in constant rotation in my life for about a year of high school.
Yeah, eighth grade for me. I switched schools, tried to change my name to Andrew from Andy. It didn't really stick. The eighth grade was near the end. Was, like, the worst, but also near the end of the phase of my life where I was just hopelessly dorky and trying to claw my way into friendship groups. And so there was this group of kids who I thought were really cool, but they were cool in the way that they introduced me to Monty Python and Led Zeppelin and AC/DC. And we would actually record videos of them doing lip syncing AC/DC. We were doing lip sync challenges long, long before it was a thing on television. But anyway, I also remember just like, you know, really trying to claw my way into their friendship circle. I think one of them was obsessed with Led Zeppelin and told me to get Houses of the Holy. And it might have been my first one, that or Zeppelin 3. And like, those were the soundtracks of 1990 for me.
I'm just looking at this list of tracks. The song remains the same. Rain song, Over the Hills and Far Away. The Crunge, Dancing Days. I love that song so much. Dire Maker.
Is the Crunge the one where he says, "Where's that confounded bridge?" This is really becoming a middle-aged podcast right here, but let's just do it.
What are you saying?
The record-breaking phenomenon.
Sorry about that.
Quiet yourself.
I mean, you know what? The problem, I have all of this music, of course, in my various music services I pay for, but I had just, it was most easily located on YouTube. So here we go. Here's a little bit of the Crunge. Oh, yeah, yeah. You're totally right. This is the one where there's Where's That Confounded Bridge? Mm-hmm. I've told this story so many times. I mean, I don't know if this really holds up for me, honestly.
Mm-hmm,
I
mean, too.
This is one of my favorite Greta Van Fleet songs, mm-hmm. though. My story with Dire Maker, which is, I guess, allegedly Jamaican slang for, like, did you have sex with a person? But when I was in high school and obsessed with this album, there was the local rock station had this, like, polka challenge the morning show did where they would play a polka-atized version of a classic rock song. And
a la Weird Al.
Right, exactly. But it would just be, you know, no words, just a song that was popular or well known, but then with that, yeah, like, you know, polka. And it one day it was Dire Maker. And I was a kid and I like heard them shouting out and no one was getting it. And then I like got in the shower and then I came out and then still no one was getting it. And then I called in and I believe the prize was tickets to Giggles Comedy Club. I won, and they were like, "You won," and they were like, "We'll send you the tickets to Giggles." And then I stupidly said, "Do you have to be 18?" And they were like, "You're not 18." I think they were like, "What 14-year-old is listening to this right now
right.
and calling in and getting Dire Maker, the polka version of Dire Maker?"
You know, I remember on this show some rumor floating around that Dire Maker was like, "Did you make her?" But according to Wikipedia, and this rings more true to me.
Did we debunk that?
The title is a play on the word Jamaica when spoken in an English accent.
Oh, like Jamaica. Rise Up Blades.
Like Rise Up Blades. Exactly. Right.
I messed that up. I was supposed to say Rise Up Lights.
Rise Up
Australian.
Lights.
That's how you say razor blades in Australian. Rise Up Lights.
In Australian, exactly.
Yes.
Anyway,
I can get around, Andrew. Like, you know, like conversationally, I can get through Australia.
I'll tell you what. I'll take the Kansas Tapestry. You can keep the Rush one, and I'll buy a few Steal Your Face, Grateful Dead logo ones.
So my question to you though is, if this is something that's bothering you, and this is going to sound mildly critical, and I don't mean it to be at all, because I actually don't hear the echo nearly as much as you do. Why was it that day one you didn't like put up a bunch of – well, you do have shelves up. But why didn't you go to greater lengths to try to soundproof that room if the echo has been bugging you?
Well,
Hello, Luke.
Is the echo better or worse? Sorry, I just remember that I had made an... Do you remember when I spoofed you with an echo on my voice?
Yes.
It was after the
you
picnic.
You were obsessed with that for like two shows.
Because we did the live picnic show, and Shinji, who set up the audio board for us, showed me how I could put echo on my voice. And then once I was able to put echo on my voice in a live situation like that just by turning up a knob, I really wanted that functionality in my studio. I don't have it, obviously, but I had pre-produced some things, and I tried to create a conversation. I tried to create one side of a conversation with my voice and echo and tried to talk with you just via drops one time. It worked about as well as me playing it there did. Anyway.
I like it, though. We need to get into more like vocal processing.
I want to so bad. I want to get a little – like talk about – the things that we used to produce down in Tony's studio. I didn't play any instruments, so we would put together fake radio shows. And he had a little thing called a Zoom, which is, I think, in the same family as the Zoom recorders we all now know. But this was an audio processing thing about the size of a Walkman, right? And you'd run your microphone through it, and you could add echo, and you could make it your voice high-pitched and low-pitched, and we'd do call-ins. We'd create full – we basically did kind of a slightly lesser version of TBTL, and those tapes are just kicking around in Tony's attic somewhere. But why did I not set my studio up properly? Because I'm lazy. Because my back has been killing me for 3-4 weeks now, and I need to get a new office chair in here. And I've made some efforts to do so, but I keep on getting stymied here and there. And it's just like, it gets in my head. It just seems like it's got to be such a big process. And it doesn't. People buy chairs, right? I'm not the first person to need a chair and buy a chair, right? Like, it's a pretty doable thing.
Well, not to mention, our bosses have offered to send us chairs because we all have to work from home. Now, you and I have been working from home, but like, there's actually a pipeline now set up to mail you a chair from Minnesota.
I don't think that's true unless you know something I don't know. They will kick a little bit of money in towards covering a chair if I need a chair.
Oh, so they'll underwrite you buying a chair.
Partially, yes, but it's really not about the money for me. It's just about, and also, like I said, like even if APM did have like some storeroom of chairs, which would be interesting, I'd like to play in that space. Seems like
sure
fun. You know, I did try to buy a chair the other day. So again, I get in my head about these things. Like, if APM was handing out chairs, I'd probably be picky about whether or not it matches my office. Not that I have some great aesthetic in here, but like, I just don't want one of those really modern looking black like executive office chairs, like some sort of Aeron deal. Like, that's, I know that they're very fancy and good looking in their own way, but it's just not a vibe that I want in here. I should focus on my back first. I just don't want one of those like big, some of them look like some sort of like, I don't know, spider robot things. Like, some of those chairs look like the Predator. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And like, I'm super not into that. So anyway, I'm trying to figure out, can I buy a chair online or do I need to sit in it first? I'd like to kind of sit in it and see if it's comfortable for me. I went to like the Fremont Vintage Market to see if they had anything. They didn't. But then there's this kind of fancy furniture store, Luke, you might know it, down at Pike Place Market. I won't necessarily say their name, but they're like right in the market in downtown Seattle, which in normal conditions, by the way, is kind of it's not the most easily navigated part of the city, right? Like, if you're coming in to drive into the market, like, ideally you will walk to the market or take public transportation. Like, I don't know. I don't love going there and looking for parking and what have you. Anyway, I call them up. I'm like, are you open for your showroom? Can I come and take a look at some desk chairs? And they're like, oh, yeah, by appointment only. You can come in, bring a face mask. We'll schedule you for a half hour from now if you want to drive into the heart of the city. I'm like, okay, cool. So I get my face mask. I drive in. I have to call from outside. The woman lets me in the store. And the moment I'm in there, she starts walking me through all this really nice furniture towards the one desk that she has. And she says, well, we only have this one desk chair. And it's one of those Predator-looking ones.
A used place or a new place?
This is a new place. This is kind of a nicer place, but I just wanted to start – I needed to start my search somewhere, right? Mm-hmm. And I'd been looking at things online, but all the ones that I liked were sold out. I think it's a tough time to buy an office chair because everybody's working from home now. I think a lot of people just found their supplies depleted. Anyway, I go in, and she's like, well, we only have one kind of office chair, and it's like the one chair. It's in the middle of the store, and it's one of those Predator-looking things. And I'm like – why are we doing this?
Can you find
this?
A picture of this chair online? And can we make it the show pick? And can we forever refer to it as Predator chair?
I mean, you know what I'm generally talking about, right? It's probably a super comfortable, super ergonomic chair that has a headrest way up top. And like, I'm sure it's like modern rich people adore this chair, I'm sure. It's just not what I want in my office.
I think it could also be described as almost like a Batman chair.
Maybe,
like,
yeah.
In that it sort of looks to be a little bit overbuilt, and it's usually black, and it's usually just got a lot going on. But it's like the office version of a gamer chair, which I see a lot of gamer chairs.
Yeah.
Because I look at so much TikTok, and people are often just sitting in their gamer chair.
But I will say, like, couldn't this woman have told me on the phone before I drove? And again, I sound like an old man. Like, I drove into the heart of the city. Like, I know that it's pandemic. Traffic isn't that bad. I was able to find parking a few blocks away. But I was on the phone with you. I said, can I come look at desk chairs? She set up an appointment with me. Like, I'm there a half hour later, and she's like, what are you here to look at? I'm like, desk chairs. She's like, oh, we only have one. I was like, couldn't you have just told me this is the one you have, and I could have looked at it online? Like, I didn't even get close to it. I was mid-step, and she said, well, she points across the room, and I'm like, oh, and I spun around like a cartoon general, and I'm just like, well, I don't want that chair, and I walked out. And while I was sort of now, stamping out, and then she's like, actually, you can't go that way. There's a metal bar blocking you. So I had to kind of change
well, the
my
biggest,
course.
To me, the biggest mistake that it sounds like this person made was she was using an S when there shouldn't have been an S. Right. She was saying chairs, plural.
Yeah.
Like, if you have one chair, that should be like the number. If someone calls up and says, like, hey, do you sell oranges, and you have one orange?
Right.
You would not say, yeah, we've got oranges. You would say, we've got an orange. Like,
well, what about the guy in the 7-Eleven during, do you remember the great lime shortage of, what, 2015? We mm-hmm. couldn't get limes on the West Coast. And I'm in a 7-Eleven. I ask the guy, do you have limes? He's like, yeah, we have yellow limes. And he just points to the lemons. And he wasn't joking.
You know what I mean? Like, if you call in, do you have desk chairs? And then they say yes, but they know they have one chair. That's, to me, like the – you're right. She should have just said, like, here's the chair, Google it. If you know, if it's for you, great, but it's the only one we have. But that's weird that she was saying chairs.
I wonder if, you know, I'm the one who probably said chairs, and she probably was just focusing on, oh, you want to make an appointment? Sure. She probably has no business, so any you get somebody through the door in a place like that is probably a big part of it, because if you tell me to look at it online, then maybe I just buy it online somewhere else. I don't really know. I think it was an innocent mistake, but it definitely did kind of irritate me. And also, to be fair, the name of the store is One Chair. So uh-huh. I guess yeah. I probably should. One Chair that Andrew
right
doesn't like.
Title.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, it's One Predator Chair.
Yes.
Or, as our friend Kamaro Kev would say, Predator, for whatever reason. Next time you see him, try to bring up a conversation about the movie Predator, and he will say Predator.
Just casually, though. I got to bring it up.
Yeah, you just got to be like low key mm-hmm. do that. Hey, speaking of the place that we work, as folks may have been noticing on Twitter and other places, today was a kind of a tough day for American public media. We had a number of colleagues who have been laid off. This probably can't come as a huge surprise just because of everything that's been going on with the economy and with media, and I won't get into specifics just because that's other people's business, but I will say that, Andrew, you and I are able to do this podcast and cover important topics such as the music of Led Zeppelin because of the donors, because of everybody who has been supporting the show for all these years and because of everybody who supported us during the TBTL-a-thon. Like, I'm not trying to be grim, but like, we'd be on a list of people who are no longer in the employ of APM, if not for the people that donate to this show.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll be completely transparent. Nobody has ever sat us down and said, listen, you need to get X, otherwise your jobs are in danger. But I feel like we are given numbers and goals, generally speaking. And I don't know what happens necessarily if we don't hit those goals, but chances are it's not great. And so on a day like today, when you wake up and you're seeing so many of your colleagues and, well, now former colleagues, in a lot of pain and insecurity and everything, it makes you appreciative even more of the TBTL-a-thon that we just went through, and knowing that the only reason we are talking here today is because we had a successful TBTL-a-thon. There's just no doubt in my mind about that. So I can't thank the listeners enough for keeping this thing going. And I know it's corny, but I got to say it every time because I think it's important. At this, the role of Luke and me in the TBTL community gets diminished every day and every year. And it's the community yes. that is definitely the best part of it. And that's all you guys. So I'm very thankful on a pretty sad day.
We're like an old stump. We're like an old tree that's fallen in the woods, Andrew, and all kinds of other vibrant life is now growing up out of the fallen tree that is you and I. And that vibrant life is the tens of listeners and their relationships with each other. And eventually one day, we'll just be gone, but there'll be a whole new ecosystem there of these tens, and it's going to be a beautiful thing. It's going to happen at episode 10,001. We will have completely disappeared. We have left this plane, and it will just be the listeners frolicking together with love and support for each other. I mean, that's our purpose. That's why we're on this planet.
Yes, absolutely. Although I have Shel Silverstein on the line here. He wants to talk to you about your tree stump story. He thinks it rings a bell in some weird way.
Yeah, okay. But seriously, like, we're thinking about our colleagues and our former colleagues who are dealing with being out of work now. And really and truly, we want to say thanks to, if you're listening to this and you've been able to support the show in any way, that includes telling your friends about it, ranking us or rating us on iTunes or whatever that's called, and very importantly, donating money to the show. That's how we're here and not, you know, out of this job. So thank you very much for letting us do this. Let's take a quick break, and then when we come back, I do want to tell you how I almost burned the house down. You think that's hyperbole, but it was a close call yesterday. So we'll get into that and the top stories in a moment on TBTL.
Hello, and welcome to Top Story.
All right, Andrew, I was making tea yesterday, and it was so cold up here at Burbank Springs, I made a fire in the fireplace and I made tea. Like, the weather has been weird. I guess, you know, later this week, it's going to actually be really warm. It's going to be like in the 80s or maybe 90s, but it was very cold and rainy here yesterday. And I just thought I need to warm up my core temperature with a cup of tea. And so we have this fancy tea kettle. It's very designy.
The predator of tea kettles.
Yes, and I bought it at this. It's right next to the Predator of Chairs store. It's the Predator of Tea Kettle store.
Okay.
And it's like, I don't know, it's a sort of like a brushed metal, and it has this kind of narrow spout on it. And it's like, it's the kind of thing you might see in one of those, like if you're in Portland, the store Canoe, or maybe Design Within Reach or something. It's not your standard tea kettle. But what I did not realize is because it's so designy, it doesn't whistle.
Oh.
Like, who makes a tea kettle that doesn't whistle? Obviously, I've never tried to use this tea kettle in my life. Luckily, I put much more water than was needed for one cup of tea in it. Like, I filled it all the way up because that's just like what I do, which is dumb, really, because if I'm boiling water for one cup of tea, why would I make it take three times as long? But I know that's just my instinct, is to fill everything up to the brim.
Mm-hmm. I understand.
So luckily I did, because I filled this thing up. I put the tea kettle on. I go and I sit on the couch and the fire is crackling away and Rudy comes out and I'm working away on my laptop. And about an hour later, I just think, what is that noise I'm hearing? It's just like a kind of a weird, slightly, I can't even describe it, but just like an odd noise from the kitchen. And all of a sudden I realize I have completely forgotten about this kettle of tea. And I go in there and there is like three molecules of water left in this tea kettle that is on like max flame from the gas stove. And I swear to God, I could have, like, 'cause I had errands to run yesterday. It was not outside the realm of possibility that I would have forgotten completely about this tea kettle, decided to go, you know, run my errands, put my shoes on, and left the house. And this thing would have caught on fire at some point. Like, I had, you know, stupidly probably, I had the flame, you know, on like max. So it's like a pretty healthy flame coming out of the stove or the stovetop. Can you believe that? I mean, that should be some kind of a, I don't know, who regulates that kind of stuff? Who handles products? Is that the FTC? The Federal Trade Commission, or the Consumer Protection. Somebody needs to know this tea kettle does not do the one job of a tea kettle is to boil water. The second job of a tea kettle is to let you know when the water's boiled.
And also, like, why would a design – it's also like a traditional – I know it can be a high-pitched, terrible sound in one way, but also – I think there's something that you associate with making tea with that whistle that is kind of part of the process that people enjoy. Designing it out, it kind of, I don't know, doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I mean, I think you did this on purpose. I want to break down your storytelling here for a second. I think you did this on purpose. No, in a good way. Calm down. Stop making the humming noise. Luke. I'm going to hold my breath. No, I think you did this on purpose. You said, I almost burnt down the house. And then you started your story by saying, I made tea and a fire in the fireplace. And of course, everybody thinks that it's a fireplace story. It's actually the most benign or the more benign of the two. It's the tea kettle that almost did you in.
Yeah. Yeah, no, the fire was safe and sound. It was all, you know, contained behind that whatever that chainmail kind of like curtain thing is, and like the fire was not the issue at all. But that tea kettle, man, and you're right. I hadn't even thought of that part of it. There's a range of different tea kettles and how annoying the whistle is, but there are lots of tea kettles that have a pleasant whistle, just kind of a nice little, you know, tonal sound or whatever. Like, but the sound of that happening is part of the whole. It's like cracking eggs into a skillet that's already hot and has, you know, butter or oil in it. It's like there are these sounds, these almost ASMR-y sounds that are part of the process of creating various foods and beverages. And I don't understand. I just basically am not somebody with the attention span to be trusted with a tea kettle that does not whistle.
I have a weird relationship with our tea kettle. It's not dirty. Although I realize it sounds dirty when I put it that way. But the tea kettle that we have, you know, I think a lot of people in their early 20s go through this phase where a lot of their home goods are secondhand. Co-workers give you couches and chairs and tea kettles sometimes. And that's why I have a tea kettle. And I spent my early 20s in New Hampshire, so there's something kind of cool. Like I have this old kind of clunky tea kettle that – you can't even – the whole thing is made of metal. You can't pick it up without using an oven mitt or a towel on the metal handle. The scream that it makes isn't pleasant when the water's done. There isn't a lot going for it, but my friend Liz, who is a producer with me, and she's a bit older than me, so you know, at some point she was getting rid of stuff and –
She was moving on to her second tea kettle
for adult life. Yes, exactly. And a more adult tea kettle. So anyway, she gave me this one, and there's something so New England-y about it. There's something like so New Hampshire about an old tea kettle that is easily replaceable and not all that great at its job, but you have a weird sense of pride in it anyway, and God damn it, I'm going to keep this thing. Like, that's very New Hampshire of me. And, like, Genevieve has mentioned many times, like, we can get a new tea kettle for, like, pennies on the dollar. We can get a very affordable new tea kettle. Nothing fancy like what you have, Luke, that is from Cork and Wood in Portland or whatever, but just a simple Bed Bath & Beyond tea kettle that would be totally fine. But I don't want to. Like, I just – and same with our skillet, our cast iron skillet. Genevieve got it used in New Hampshire at a flea market, and it was all rusty when she got it. God knows how old it is, and she scoured it with sandpaper and re-seasoned it and tempered it, and – I still don't think it'll ever be as good as a new one, but we've been using it for, you know, 15 plus years now, and I don't want to replace it. They're like these two old clunky New Hampshire items that I have that I don't want to get rid of.
I get that. I can't think of any good examples off the top of my head, but here's one. I have that relationship now with my lawnmower, which is not new. But it's also, I mean, I got it when we moved here, so it's, I don't know, 5 or 6 years old. But I love that thing. And every year, I feel like I'll, as long as I have a yard wherever I end up living, I'll always probably have it and nurse it along. And, like, I know how to change the oil on it, and I know how to, like, you know, like, kind of change the spark plug and get it going each year. And, like, I have a feeling that's going to be my ride or die lawnmower. And I have a strong connection to it. Like, the other day, it has... It's the kind where you hold down a thing on the handle and it propels the front wheels a little bit.
Yeah. Yep.
And that thing was being weird for some reason. And I was like, oh, is that breaking on it? And normally my thought when I have something and it breaks is, well, I should go get a new one. But my thought was like, I got to take this to the repair shop. I got to get this thing fixed because this is my lawnmower. And like, it's weird. It's like, maybe it's as I'm getting older, I'm with you. There are things, there are objects in this house that I just like them, even though they're kind of imperfect, because they're just now have been part of my life for years. And yet it was like in my younger days, first of all, the first wave of me having my own place was all hand-me-down stuff, like you said, just all stuff I got from my parents or somebody at one of my jobs or like a free thing that was on the, you know, out in front of someone's apartment building. And then you start to get a couple, like the first time you buy something new, like even at IKEA, I was just like, wow, this is really happening. And it was, and my thought process was always like, let's constantly upgrade. Like, let's get the best version of this, whatever this thing is. And now I'm kind of settling into a mode of, if something works, I just want to like hang on to it as long as possible, because I don't want to learn how to use something new or go through the process of trying to find something new. I just like the stuff that I have, and I want to try to nurse it along as long as I can, which is kind of a new feeling for me.
Well, I like that you feel that way about your truck a little bit, right? Like when...
Oh, man. Hugely.
Yeah, when TBTL was new, a big... Like your first kind of fancy car was like a character in TBTL. I mean, before I ever met you, I knew about Space Car, right? And it was like a car that had some of the bells and whistles and electronic trappings of a modern car. And you had such a kick out of it that you talked about it on the show a lot. You called it Space Car. But I love that now, 10 years later, probably your favorite vehicle is the old jalopy that you've been driving around town that you keep on fixing with duct tape and spit.
Dude, I realized that, like, so I mentioned at the top of the show, it's just been raining intensely here. And I, because of the pandemic, there'll be like 3-4 days in a row where I don't even like get in the car and drive anywhere or get in the 4Runner. So I look out the window and I realize the windows have been partially down, like because the AC doesn't work anymore because it's $1,000 to fix it. So I'm perpetually driving around with the windows down. And it was like, so we had 2 days of like the kind of rain where I was worried like we may have, you know, flooding or something, like, yeah. And I look outside and I realize the driver's window is down a little bit and the passenger window is down a little bit. And I'm just like, you got to be kidding me. 2 days of that. And I just go out there with a towel and it's just like, it's totally fine. Yeah, there's water in there. But guess what? Mm-hmm. The seats are splitting. The leather is already splitting on the seats. So you can't really make that worse. It's just like the car is already so beat up that I just dried it off and shut the doors and it was like I rolled the windows up. It's like it's so unprecious to me as a vehicle. It's very relieving because when we had the other car, yeah, it was like I would be really bummed out if there was a scratch on it or something went wrong with it. But this one, I am reaching this point, though, where I have to really decide if I'm going to, because this car is probably not going to run forever. I mean, it's at a couple hundred thousand miles. But I've been looking for a replacement, and I just want the exact same car, like a 1997 Toyota 4Runner. Mm-hmm. I call it a car. You're right. It's probably more of a truck. I think it's actually on a truck chassis, which is part of what's good about it. But I just want another 1997 Toyota 4Runner. And I was like thinking, well, why is it? I was like, well, because this one's really beat up. Somebody hit the side of the car in a parking lot, and part of the like driver's side fender fell off, and I can't put it back on unless I have a body shop pull out part of the front. Like, you can drive it, but... like it needs, so that's kind of looks pretty unsightly. The paint is really oxidized. Like I said, the seats are kind of split up. It's the car is mostly held together by matted dog hair that's Rudy has shed. But I had the thought the other day, maybe I'll just invest the money and get that dent pulled out and get the fender fixed and maybe get it repainted and just be like, I get the AC fixed and just be like, I'm going to commit to this car for the foreseeable future.
You can be like Columbo and start referring to it as your classic. Oh, yeah, it's a classic.
Speaking of classics, let's talk about Diego, the Galapagos tortoise, with a species-saving sex drive, who is retiring, according to this article in the BBC. A giant Galapagos tortoise whose legendary libido has been credited with saving his species from extinction has officially entered retirement. Andrew, usually when I obviously print out these stories for myself so that I can kind of easily access them and flip around in the story. And one of the things I do, let me just go right to the least important part of this. When I use the program Print Friendly, is I delete all the photos because I don't want to waste a bunch of ink printing photos. So what I do is I try to reduce these stories down to being all text, just so it's simple and doesn't use up a lot of toner. This is one of the stories where I left the photo in for myself because the look on the face of Diego looks like a 100-year-old turtle who has produced more than, they think, 1,000 offsprings. This is what it looks like when you have just been hardcore, relentlessly mating so as to save your species for, I don't know, 80 years?
Mm-hmm.
Are you looking at this picture of Diego?
Yeah, I am. Now, there's a couple. There's the one where he's chomping lettuce or something down in the bottom. I mean, he definitely looks like the father of a lot of children. Just really.
He's just walking and his neck is just,
yeah,
like, he's just like, his head is just hung low. He's just like, he looks so over it.
He does look over it. He also looks obscene, which is a weird thing to say about an animal. Maybe it's just because we're talking about this animal's sex drive and I'm just taking everything to a dirty place, but there is something about him that looks obscene. Like, if you were flipping,
you mean like slightly phallic?
Kind of phallic, but not even that specifically. Like, it's one of those things where, like, if you saw somebody at a coffee shop flipping through their phone photos pretty quickly, and you saw that one fly by, you would assume that it was something dirty.
Kind of looks like Junior Soprano, too.
Also, well, same thing applies with Junior Soprano, I think. But yeah, he definitely looks like he's done with it. I mean, it sounds like, I mean, not a lot of people can retire saying, I am credited with, you know, preserving my species.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, it's actually
take
kind
some
of
time,
a crazy
buddy.
Story. Yeah, you know what? Enjoy your retirement.
Yeah.
The breeding program began in the 1960s. There was a point at which they were down to a very small number of these tortoises. There were only 2 males and 12 females of this species alive on this island of Española as of 50 years ago. And so they actually brought Diego down from a zoo somewhere and put him together with, you know, these female tortoises of this particular species. And now they have about 2,000 of them, and they think that he is responsible for 40% of the 2,000 giant tortoises that are alive today. So maybe just under 1,000 offspring, thanks to old Diego.
Wow. Wow. So what's Diego going to do now with his time off? Spend time with family?
Yeah. How old? 100 years. I mean, I know that tortoises live a long time. 100 years is a really long time. I wonder. Also, I hope it's not one of those things where, like, when he gets back to wherever he's going and he's no longer responsible to, you know, preserve the species, if he just loses his verve, his joie de vivre,
yeah,
he just
right.
kind of, like, starts to wither even more. I mean, he looks pretty withered as it is, but just kind of, he loses his reason for existence and then just kind of goes into a funk and dies.
Yeah, like, maybe they can make a romantic comedy about him where maybe, well, maybe he'll settle down with just one single partner and he can mm-hmm. just kind of, you know,
people
live
find
out
love
his,
in old age all the time.
Yeah, like kind of a Walter Matthau.
He also looks a little bit like, he looks like Adam, he looks like Alan Arkin as well, the actor Alan Arkin. If you're...
Dude, Retro News Now, the Twitter feed, never lets me down. Let me see if I can find. There was a movie with Alan Arkin and Peter Falk that I did not know about, but Retro News Now tweeted out the movie poster of it yesterday for its anniversary. I don't know if you're looking it up as we speak. I'm trying to look it up too. It looks amazing. Did you know that those two were in a movie together?
No, I didn't. Alan Arkin.
Yeah, sorry, I'm really taking us off track here. I think
Falk.
I can get.
Well, no, it's actually going to help me though because I want to talk about something. The In-Laws.
The In-Laws.
1979.
Yes. And look at that. I don't know if you can see the cover, but you have Peter Falk.
Yeah, they're on a wedding cake.
Oh, I'm just looking at a slightly different one, but Peter Falk's holding a gun. Alan Arkin is holding like a plastic toy chomper thing, like the type of teeth that you could wind up.
Uh-huh.
And he's trying
chattering teeth.
Yeah, chattering teeth. And he's trying to block the gun with the chattering teeth while using his other hand to put a finger in his ear because he doesn't want to hear the gun go off. It says, while the father of the bride was extracting a molar from Mrs. Cohen, the father of the groom was extracting $20 million from the U.S. Mint, and this was only the beginning. The In-Laws.
Yeah, I'll check that out. Hey, you know, this is going to seem like a stretch, but I've been obsessed with that show, Get Shorty, and most of the episodes are directed by, wait for it, Adam Arkin.
Oh.
Adam Arkin, Alan Arkin's son.
I didn't know he was a thing.
It's, he's an actor though. You know about his acting.
Right? I don't think so. No, I really like Alan Arkin. No joke. Like,
if you Google Adam Arkin, you'll be like,
okay.
Oh, I've seen this guy in a lot of things too.
Okay.
But he directs these Get Shorty episodes now, which I cannot speak highly enough of. I'm very sad though because I went from not knowing that they had a season 3 to watching all. I think it's 7 episodes, in like 2 days. So now I'm caught up on the show, and now I have to just like wait like a commoner each week for the new episode to drop. But Adam Arkin is doing an amazing job with directing those. And I sent this text to you and Hayes last night. There's this basic the thing that's so great about this Get Shorty show, I think, is that they've done a really good job of echoing the real world. So there's basically a Harvey Weinstein-esque character who gets taken down, not to give anything away. And there's this critical point where the Weinstein character is trying to control the narrative, and one of the PR people from the film studio is like, it's going to be on MSNBC in 10 minutes. Hmm. And I just thought that was, oh, it's kind of funny they choose MSNBC. And then, of course, the critical scene where it's like the S is really hitting the fan is our boy Chris Hayes reading the news of what has happened this particular character. And I was like, honestly, for all the impressive things that Chris has done, including writing awesome books and hosting a great podcast and hosting a television show 5 nights a week, him being the person delivering this pretend news on MSNBC on Get Shorty was like the most starstruck I've ever been about our friend Chris Hayes.
Yeah, you sent me a clip of it, but it was like you kind of just filming your TV, and I was in the middle of cooking when I saw it, so I didn't pick up the details. I wasn't sure if they had just taken old footage of Chris's show and had it on kind of in the background, but it sounds like no. Was given some lines to read that are specific to this plot line.
Yeah, no, it was like one of those things where they wrote... By the way, Chris, great delivery. Totally believable. They wrote, the whole, like, it'd be as if a news anchor was reporting on the initial, like, kind of Harvey Weinstein stuff when it really hit sort of critical mass. But mm-hmm. It's about this character, Lawrence Budd, in the film, played by Steven Weber from Wings. And he's great
Show. Sleep easy, Hutch Rhymes.
Yeah, indeed. So I was very impressed, like, at that, like, I'm this is the difference between me and Chris. I watch Get Shorty. Chris is in Get Shorty.
Right. Yeah. And I wonder if he watches it.
I mean, it's like, that's the kind of thing where if I did that, if I was somehow a part of that show or a show like that I really loved, that would be defining for me. And it probably was a Tuesday for Chris.
Right.
It's probably like, gonna jump. Okay, we got the cameras on you. Can you just read? We're gonna put this on the prompter. And then it's like, probably just went on with his life. Jeopardy is out of new episodes, and it's unclear what they're going to do to try to fill time. They've been doing, like, all kinds of – well, they've been alternating between new shows and sort of old shows. They've been highlighting some of the, like, kind of – there's this – like, now you basically have Ken Jen, James Holzhauer, and I always forget the other guy's name, but when they had that GOAT tournament – it's so weird for me the way the celebrity of Ken Jennings has grown, and I don't mean that in a like he doesn't deserve it way, but it just seems to get bigger as time goes on, like, and more relevant, like because of the GOAT tournament, and now because they're out of episodes, like I said, they're talking about maybe playing all of his episodes in a row. There's been talk for a while now about maybe him taking over for Alex Trebek when he does retire. It's just interesting to me that his fame just seems to get bigger and bigger related to this show.
Yes, and of course we asked him about that rumor about him taking over, and he was I believe he demurred as you'd expect, and I think he tried to put
it
to rest.
He also lied to our faces.
But he also exactly in the same exact podcast he lied to us about. Actually, did he lie or did he just not? Now I'm confused on the details of that. I know that it's a beef. I know that we're mad at him. That's all I know.
Yes, exactly. And that's the important thing to remember is we are mad at him. So, they don't know exactly what they're going to do. I'm also wondering if there's going to be a point where they – like, I don't know what phase they're in California, but it seems like you could do Jeopardy socially distanced, right? Like, you maybe spread the contestants out a little more. I mean, Alex doesn't have to go over and stand next to him when they do that interview, and you don't have to have an audience. I mean, you could just pipe in the sound. Like, it actually seems doable.
Yeah, and the sound, you don't – does the Jeopardy audience really make that much sound? They just, like,
they clap softly, I believe, when Johnny says, "This is Jeopardy." Oh, by the way, that's my official audition tape for being the announcer on Jeopardy if you guys ever need someone.
That's pretty
good.
But,
no, it seems doable. I mean, I guess there's also the question of Alex Trebek's health.
Yeah, that's true.
If he sort of is you know, I mean, he would be definitely on a, you could say, immunocompromised list at this point with the cancer he's been battling. So maybe that's part of it as well.
That must be, as a matter of fact. I didn't even think of that because everything you were saying makes sense. But yeah, you'd need, I don't think they want him anywhere near other people, like just, you know, on the off chance of him catching something that would just be absolutely terrible, especially if it was just because he was doing something for our entertainment. But like if he was able to do it remotely, maybe. But yeah, they're not going to have him anywhere near that set.
I was reading about this in New York Magazine, well, Vulture, really, and somebody named Devin Ivey was writing and then had one of those little hyperlinks about, you know, the gaffes that happen on Jeopardy. I was just going to play this for you. I don't know if this will translate as audio as much because there's a photo, like the clue involved a photo of some African warriors. But take a listen to this. Would you ever – oh, man. Of course, it doesn't want to let me play it for some weird reason. Why would that not let me play that? The media could not be played.
Oh.
Basically, what happened was it was a question about the African warrior Shaka Zulu. And this woman gives the answer of Shaka Khan.
That's it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
She says Shaka Khan.
I think
but
I
like.
Do you? I think I have it here. If this is the right one, will this let me?
Yeah. You got it. Zulus this it? For 2000.
Yep.
Take a look here. As on each September 24th, Zulus celebrate a holiday that was named in honor of this warrior leader of the early 1800s. Sarah.
Who is Shaka Khan?
No. Matt. Who is Shaka Zulu? Shaka Zulu.
That's not.
That was the person who was filming this on Twitter who was laughing that you heard, I think, right? Than that.
I mean, like Shaka Khan, Shaka Khan, Shaka Khan, Shaka Khan, Shaka Khan. Like, that's just, if I, you know, as a white person saying, thinking, like, I mean, it's just a slip of the tongue, uh-huh. obviously. But it's like not the slip of the tongue you want to have.
Right,
of
right.
conflating Shaka Khan with Shaka Zulu.
Right, right, right. Of course, I would have just said Nicole Kidman. I think that I just, the idea of being on that stage is just so foreign to me. I can you even imagine? Like, you just asked me one
yes.
thing, like, what's the, it would be so terrible. I couldn't think of David Lynch. David Lynch was probably the first director whose name I knew, right? Like, who had a body of work that I was interested in. Like, do you have any David Lynch movies? I couldn't think of his name on this show the other day. Stakes are pretty low for this show. Can you imagine? They would ask me my own name on Jeopardy, and I would say I don't know and probably start crying.
It's interesting to me because I keep setting up these weird Venn diagrams of late of just, like, unlikely things. Like, I would say you're probably the smartest person who would do the worst at Jeopardy.
I don't
you know
even
what I mean?
Like, true,
there are people that would
it.
Do bad at Jeopardy, and then there are people who are smart. And they're, but I think you would be unique among, because you are a very intelligent person. But that definitely would play into, I think, some kind of insecurity that you have, which tends to magnify itself because when you get nervous about not remembering something, it seems like it makes it harder for you to remember it.
Yeah, yeah. Everything locks up in this weird way.
Mm. I would either have a very high score and win it, or I wouldn't make it into Final Jeopardy because part of the deal is if you have negative money – at the end of the show, they don't even let you answer the final question.
Oh, okay.
There's no in-between for me. There's no me having $8,000. It's either I have $80,000, I'm running away with it, or I have negative $80,000, and they've asked me to leave the premises.
And you just hear you shouting from off stage, I have a system. Just one more
yes.
shot. I have a system.
Shaka Khan! Because I love watching Jeopardy. Oh man, the other night I was watching it by myself, and it was just real. It was one of those trees falling thing because I just, for whatever reason, was hot, and I got every single answer right yeah. for like a while. And I just like looked at the animals, and I was like, "Well, you're the only ones who'll ever know this happened."
Mm-hmm.
But it's also because I don't lose any money when I give the wrong answer because I'm not really playing. I'm just at home, and of course, I only remember getting the right answers. But if you're really on the show, you can't just guess at every single answer because you're going to start going in the wrong direction really fast.
Yeah, we don't have it on a lot in the house, but when it is on, I always enjoy it. Sometimes Genevieve will be watching it, and then I'll just kind of come in the room and start spouting words out of my mouth that don't even make sense. Like, it's weird. Like, I'll just, as if me throwing something out there is going to be helpful in any way when I'm nowhere near what the answer is, and Genevieve's just trying to watch the show. And also, Genevieve knows most of the answers, and I do not.
Right. Well, that's – I was assuming Genevieve would be really into it, one, because she and I are basically the same person, and two, because I would imagine she would get a lot of the answers right, which is kind of a reward system. And I would also imagine that you're not as interested in the show because it doesn't play into the way your brain tends to work.
Yeah, I do like game shows, and so I do like the whole vibe of Jeopardy. There's nothing I don't like about Jeopardy, and on the occasion that we put it on, I always enjoy it, and we'll usually watch several in a row. But yeah, I've never gotten wrapped up in the kind of like whatever the saga that is going on. Mm-hmm. In the moment is. I always find out about it like third hand, usually via this podcast. I actually host right, this podcast, and it's also my way of learning about Jeopardy.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Because between the listeners that will randomly pop up on there, I told you I was getting Thai food in the before times, and they have like a little TV playing in the waiting area, and I look up and it's friggin' listener Joe from over there in, I don't know if it's Port Orchard or Bremerton, but from over there, listener Joe just like cleaning up on the teacher's edition, I think, of Jeopardy or whatever. I'm just like, holy shit. Like, we have a fairly long list of listeners who've been on the show, and then we do have our kind of tangential connection to old Ken Jen. So,
yeah, listener Simone. Anyway, I don't know if she's still a listener, yes. But we used to have a listener named Simone who was on Jeopardy, and she might have even been on TBTL to talk about her Jeopardy time. I could be...
She's the one in like
that.
The Bay Area, I think, maybe.
Maybe. Anyway. And also my friend Becky, who's also a musician and also works for the British Embassy, also was on Jeopardy about a year and a half ago. I'll be honest, she didn't do very well, but still, she was on Jeopardy, for God's sake.
Oh, yeah. I've definitely missed my window for that. My brain is shrinking too fast now. Had I gone at like 29, maybe... I think I could have possibly gotten on, but at this point, it's just, you know, I was never that sharp, but I am duller than I was. Mm-hmm. And I have the same, I mean, look, I couldn't think of friggin' the band Rush at the beginning of today's show. I mean, they have whole categories about Rush. That's one of the main categories on Jeopardy.
They do. It's called Rush Hour is the name of the category, mm-hmm. I believe.
Yep, and I'd be like, what are skeletons on the album covers? Like, are you drunk, sir?
That's where I come in. I come in the room, I just start screaming, roll the bones. And it's like a question about actual Rush Hours. All right, I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week, I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man, it's not from a female.
All right, any emails striking your fancy today, my friend?
Yeah, I got a few things I'd like to share with you. I'm going to start with a voicemail that we received, I believe, this morning. I'm not going to set it up too much because I don't want to ruin anything.
Hey guys, it's Chris from New York. So some high school friends of mine and I were catching up on Zoom tonight, and we remembered a class that we took our junior year called Forensic Science, and our teacher was really interesting. He told great stories, but basically like 85% of the class was us watching VHS recordings of a TV show called Medical Detectives. And what Medical Detectives did was showcase a crime each episode and describe the science that they used to solve the case. So I looked it up, and I realized that Medical Detective was the show that eventually became Forensic Files. So, yes, ooh. Luke, tonight I realized that I got high school class credit to watch episodes of Forensic Files. Power out.
I also, did you know about that, Luke, when he said medical detectives? Did you know what no. he was going to say? Because that
no,
means
I
there
didn't.
Might be a whole, like, there might be a whole vein of Forensic Files or proto-Forensic Files that you haven't even seen yet that we can dig up. That's fresh entertainment.
Yeah. Yeah. I have not been messing with Forensic Files or even my so-called murder shows as much as I used to. I wonder if part of it has been what's been going on with the George Floyd stuff or just the general kind of tone of maybe during the pandemic. I think it's been like, I don't know, maybe it's or maybe I'm finally connecting with the real thought that, you know, these are tragedies in people's lives and maybe I should try to be slightly less entertained by them. I don't know. I mean, I haven't consciously had that thought, but something subtly has been steering me away from watching a whole bunch of that stuff. I've been mostly watching a show called Building Off the Grid on the Discovery Channel, and then now Get Shorty. But that reminds me of when I transferred high schools for my senior year, which is when you really want to do it, Andrew, if you can. You want to show up at a new school, about to have a baby, with some pretty serious acne, and no shared memories with anyone in your class. That's really that is the key to social success. I went from being this kid at the Christian school who like had a lot of friends and I guess was probably fairly popular to just being this complete weirdo that literally nobody knew who I was. And all of senior year is just people going, "Hey, remember freshman year when Hans Peter did this?" And then me going, "That does not ring a bell." But anyway, I the reason I really wanted to go to Nathan Hale was because they had a radio station, C89, and you had to take this class, Introduction to Radio, and it was the weirdest class because all we did was watch movies, it was very hard to understand what the point was we were supposed to take from. I mean, it was a great class because we got to watch movies. We watched Groundhog Day with Bill Murray
because of the radio scene.
Yes, I don't know why we did. We also watched this movie starring Clint Eastwood called Play Misty for Me.
Oh, I've heard of that. That's a very famous movie, but I don't know if it's any good.
Let me see if I can. I mean, I guess I found it watchable, but it was, you know, because anytime you get to watch a real movie in class, you're like, cool. Play Misty for Me is where Clint Eastwood is he's a radio DJ, I want to say in like Carmel, California. And then a woman becomes obsessed with him and starts stalking him.
Oh, I didn't know.
And we would watch the movie Play Misty for Me to illustrate the point that you should pick a pretend name when you're a radio DJ.
It feels like there's a faster way to get that message across.
Yeah, like what I just said. Hey, you guys are going to want to come up with a made-up name because someone might hear you if it's your real name and they might get the wrong idea. Instead, we watched the entirety of Play Misty for Me.
That's why, by the way, that is why my name is Andrew Walsh on the show. My real name is Andrew Rance with a Z.
That's a pretty good spoof. I would attribute whatever success I've had in the world of radio to the fact that I was doggedly and obsessively committed to always using my real name at all times. Like the first job I got where I was talking on the radio was when I was a traffic reporter, and everybody on there had fake names because you were on like 10 different stations, and like so everyone just assumed that like you weren't supposed to have the same name on the different radio stations. But I was like, I don't think that's a rule. So people would be like, I'm Trisha Rhodes and I'm Bev Devlin and I'm, you know, whatever. Everybody had their kind of like fake radio names, and I was like, listen, if I say something moderately entertaining on this, they better goddamn figure out that it's LB. Like I was not gonna go with like you know, what would my traffic name be?
Luke Arbogast. Sorry, I'm just making a lot. By the way, is that
good?
So
point.
We have something named Sprint Arbogast. Is that a real name? Because
yes.
Sprint sounds like a made up name, but I think Arbogast doesn't.
her name's actually Cynthia.
Oh,
Cynthia
okay.
Arbogast.
Oh,
but her
okay.
dad would always call her Sprints. Her nickname growing up was Sprints.
Oh, I like
so
that.
So actually, so Sprints is that's not a made up name.
Okay.
Old Sprintzer, who I know and love, I've known her for many, many years. We used to sit next to each other at Metro Traffic. That's a real name, basically. Like that's a name that she was using in life before working at that traffic place.
That's cool. I like that. And also, like, if you're like Sprints, like I'm sprint because she's a traffic reporter sprinting
yeah.
from one place to another. But that's not even how it's spelled. I'm looking it up here. I did assume it was spelled like Sprints, but it's Sprince.
We keep having this conversation, I think, every couple months. But I have to wonder if all these apps, you know, like Waze and stuff, are just going to completely and totally eliminate. I mean, it probably will still take a while. And also, it's like, honestly, radio stations need filler. So it may just go on indefinitely, just almost as a way of killing, you know, 11 minutes per hour if you do like four updates. But it's like, to be honest, we don't really need that stuff anymore. I mean, I use Waze and it's a much more, it seems to be a much more accurate way to figure out how long I'm going to be in traffic and what's going on with stuff.
But that's also why some companies, like I think that they did, let's just talk about Cairo Radio, you know, they were probably like, do we either get rid of traffic or do we double down on it and like add a lot more context to it? And that's right. how you end up with Chris Sullivan's Choke Points, which is not the third book in the, God, I can't even, what's the sexy book?
50 Shades
Touchy
of Grey.
Gray. Touchy Gray is a Grateful Dead song, by the way.
Sure, Oksa Moksa.
50 Shades of Touch of Gray, which is one of the sexier.
Shades of Oksa Moksa.
One of the sexier Grateful Dead records. But, you know, so they decide, okay, we're going to actually put somebody on it full time and give you all yeah. this information that the apps
right.
can't give you because you want to know
right.
why is it happening, where is it happening, and how can you avoid
and how
it?
How can you avoid it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, they actually do some reporting around the like, you know, the traffic. Like, it's not just it's slow here, but it's like, here's what DOT is trying to do, and here's why they chose to do it here, and here's what they're trying to alleviate, and just really just burrow down into the minutiae of why you're sitting in traffic.
Which, by the way, I mean, there is an argument for it. Like, I don't drive sure. much, and I'm not, you know, I'm not reliant on that stuff all that much, but on the occasion when you are sitting in traffic, like a big part of listening to the traffic reports is feeling like you're not alone, or at least kind of knowing what's mm-hmm. going on up there. Like somehow, like at least knowing, like you can look at your phone and see, oh, I'm on the red line until we get to this, you know, intersection or whatever, and then things are going to clear up. But I do think that you're sitting in your car, you want to hear people talk about it just because you feel like you're connected to it. It's all you can think about in the moment, so you might as mm-hmm. well hear what's going on.
Yeah, I always say it's like sitting in traffic is like having really bad diarrhea. It's like when you explain it to someone, they just don't get how personal it was to you when it was happening.
Or a dream, I guess, sort of. But
like,
diarrhea.
When you get there, and when you get there, and you're just like, oh, the traffic was so bad. It's like you're as the person hearing it, you're kind of like, yeah. I mean, we've been in traffic; it probably sucked. But when you're stuck in it, when it's stopped, it just like. It's a very claustrophobic feeling. Speaking of dreams, Andrew, I had a dream the other day that I was hanging out with people. I can't even remember who was there or if it was a work or social function, but I just had this moment where I realized, oh shit, I'm not wearing a mask. Nobody's wearing a mask. We've been hanging out this whole time and we don't have masks on. And you know what I used to, previously how that dream used to work for me? Oh my God, I'm naked. I've been hanging out and we've been just hanging out and I am just naked the whole time. And then I become super embarrassed and I'm trying to escape from whatever social situation I'm in because I'm naked all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. Not having a mask is the new naked for
wow.
my brain.
And do you think it's also tied to this idea that like we now have some permissions to go out? Your county actually is even ahead of my county by half of a phase, I believe.
Yes,
and so
are.
There are like opportunities to go if you wanted to eat in a diner, maybe. I mean, I don't know what specifically is going on in your neighborhood, but I know there are places around here where I can go to a teriyaki place and sit at a table that's away
madness.
From everybody else. Yes, I was thinking about Teriyaki Madness the other day. I don't know if that place is open, but another one of my favorite places has some very limited seating. Anyway, is that what is going on in your head? And are you conflicted about this idea about what you're allowed to do versus what you think is safe?
Maybe. I mean, you know what? Actually, that's probably what's going on because you're right. We're in phase two here in Whatcom County. And so my sense is most things are open again with rules about, you know, where you can sit and how many people can be in there. I haven't really gone out much because I'm very conflicted. There's like what is now legally permissible, and then there's what is going to actually possibly vector more and put me in danger or put other people in danger, you know? Mm-hmm. And I haven't quite been able to figure out, like, just because something is open and I'm allowed to go sit in there and have some dinner, does that mean it's a good idea for me to go do that? I don't know. So maybe that is my brain trying to work out that tension.
Yeah, because it's something I've been thinking a lot about because, like, again, we're not quite we're at, like, what they're calling 1.5. What were they actually calling it? Modified 1.5 plus is what I heard Bill Radke, some official had described it to him that way, and I don't think he was spoofing. But, you know, I've been thinking about going to the movies a lot lately. There are no movie theaters open, but, like, it's weird how I don't go to the movies all that often, but let's say it's, you know, during normal times, we can go through phases where we're going every weekend for a while, then not go for a couple of months, and then we can go to the movies or not go to the movies all week. But anyway, it is something that if you had told me everything is going to shut down, what are you going to miss the most? I don't think that would have been near the top of my list, but it's something I've been thinking a lot about. And I'm like, well, if the AMC near our house opened right now, and they said, you know, you have to wear a mask in the lobby, not while you're horfing your popcorn in the theater. But, we're going to make sure that nobody can sit next to each other in the theater. There's going to be social distancing. You have to wear a mask in the lobby, like whatever else they had to do. But we're open again. I feel like I would be there like today and I would see a terrible movie. Like I just want to sit in a movie theater and eat popcorn like really bad. But I don't know if I should do that. That's the thing, though. Like, just because you can doesn't mean you should. Like, is one of the reasons these things are opening because some people are kind of forcing the issue and maybe mm-hmm. I need to be more responsible than those people and realize, no, there are still sacrifices to be had because obviously everybody is concerned about what comes next and whether or not we see the second wave.
Yes, and everywhere it seems that just about everywhere where things have opened up the most and are the most sort of unregulated, that's where we're seeing spikes in transmission of the virus, which just kind of logically follows. So, but I'm with you, you know, like I'm not a person who goes to that many movies, and yet for some reason that keeps coming into my mind. Like, I think because, you know, you'll be sort of bored on a given day, and it's just like, I don't know, I don't want to spend my whole life in the TV room. And so the idea of going to a movie just feels like, I don't know, a big adventure and an exciting thing. And if they said a movie theater was open, I still think I wouldn't go right now, but it would be tempting. And again, that's not even something that I do a lot in like normal life, but for some reason, maybe just the not having access to it makes it seem like a fun, interesting idea to me.
Yeah. And I wonder if it's generational too, because for me, there's just something so comforting about the entire going to the movie theater experience. Again, no matter what's on the screen, there's something, and I don't know if it must trigger some sort of childhood memory for me. I don't know what it is. Maybe I just really like popcorn. Like, why do I have to make it that complicated, right? But, you know, I just don't know that, because I just had this weird theory that, like, when theaters open again, they'll do great because people are dying to go back to the theaters. You think they will? Because I thought you were making the opposite argument on the show like a month or two ago, saying that no, people are just like very comfortable being in their homes now, and it's going to be one more kind of nail in the coffin.
Well, I think long term the prospects are bad, but I think short term, I think anything that reopens, this is what I've noticed, it's packed because there's just the novelty, the fact that we couldn't do anything and now we can do some things, but I don't think that that's like, I'm not, you know, some sort of, you know, business analyst, but my guess would be that if movie theaters open back up, they would be pretty busy for a while just because people would be like, oh my god, this is so great that we can do this again, and then we would all remember that we can watch King of Staten Island streaming, you know, direct to our TVs. But like, I do think that long term the way that we're consuming media has changed at even more rapid pace because of this. But I think short term it might be popular. Like bowling alleys, probably long term prospects bad. If you opened a bowling alley, it'd probably be packed, or as packed as they're allowed to be, don't you think?
Right now,
just 'cause
I don't
we're all
know.
So bored?
I don't actually know. Bowling alleys, I don't think. Bowling alleys, I don't think so as much, but that might just be me. Like, I'm not a really germ-phobic kind of person, but, like, even – and I love bowling alleys. In fact, the older the bowling alley, the better. But, it just seems like they are science. It feels like you're in a petri dish when you're in there. I mean, you're sticking your hands in these holes in a ball, and we talk about it all the time. Then you eat a chicken wing, and then you use your hands to put on these shoes that strangers have been wearing for decades. Like, it is just like the dirtiest, germiest of places. I love them, don't get me wrong. But God, I don't see even that like doesn't sound that appealing to me. If the 10th frame,
I think that
the 11th
seems very
frame
fixable.
Open, what's that?
I think that's very fixable. Well, the bowling balls are no longer out there for everyone to have. You basically have to put the bowling balls somewhere else. You just have to spray them down when someone's done with them. And the shoes are heavily sprayed out. I bet you that the shoes are actually not that vectory. And if you just went every other lane, I don't know. I mean, I'm also not rushing out to do that. But it's funny to me the things that turn out to be, and I'm not saying bowling is one of them, but it's weird the things that turn out to be less dangerous than you'd sort of instinctively think. Now, bowling may be as dangerous as you think it is, but I wouldn't be surprised to hear that it's kind of fine.
Maybe. And again, I'm not talking about actual science here so much as just like the mentality of going into it. Yeah. Like for me, and this is just me, I'm not saying, again, I'm not trying to make any kind of broad proclamations about how the populace feels about bowling alleys vis-a-vis or compared to movie theaters. But for me, I'd be comfortable as long as it wasn't, As long as it wasn't an outward kind of show of disrespect, you know, to the population at large, I would be way more comfortable going into a clean movie theater with social distancing than a bowling alley, because I would just be thinking about the germs in the bowling alley a lot more, whether or not it actually is a less safe environment.
Yeah.
Oh shit. We're doing emails. Can I read to you just a quick couple of emails here regarding pigs in blankets? Mm-hmm. I talked about this debate that was going on in my house in Ohio a couple of years ago when I referred to pigs in blankets as little hot dogs wrapped in dough, and my family was confused because they thought I was talking about that Eastern European, like a ground beef
cabbage.
Wrapped in cabbage and like baked and like spicy stuff. And Lori says, my family called meat and rice wrapped in cabbage dish porcupines. Not pigs in a blanket. I like that. And then I got a more kind of definitive answer here from Anna, who says, listening to your conversation about what constitutes pigs in a blanket, the correct answer is that it's hot dogs wrapped in dough. Yep, we're on the same page there. You can take it from me, a 10 of Eastern European descent, Kaparthorusin, modern-day Ukraine. I think I said that very wrong. The thing with the spiced meat wrapped in cabbage is something we call halupki. Nope, sorry. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do that again. Third time's a charm. Halupki is how it should be pronounced. Halupki. I'm located in the Pittsburgh area, only about an hour from the Ohio border. It's funny how we can be so close geographically, but still have such different terms and lexicons, such is the way when melding all those Eastern European cultures, I guess. Anyway, that's from Anna. Halupki is the dish. And also, I really want some now. I should probably just make some tonight.
Yeah, I wish. I'll tell you what. That's also low carb, which would be kind of nice. You like a sausage wrapped in cabbage. It's like pretty from a carb standpoint. That's like a pretty good call.
Yeah, I don't think it's sausage. I think it's beef, but for whatever it's worth,
Same difference.
Yeah,
but it's like a protein. Wrapped in a cabbage. It's like that's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
I love cabbage. Depending on the context, you know what I made last night was there was this jar of masala. You know, pre-made, just kind of like that Indian sort of sauce. So I just made up some rice. But then, you know, usually you cook that with like some chicken or something. But I just cut an onion up, just cut it into like really big chunks and then sauteed that up and then threw the masala in. So it was just like masala and onions and some rice.
And some rice.
For dinner.
Okay, gotcha. I was going to say, you need something. You can't just eat an onion and sauce.
Well, I could if I wanted to. You're not the boss of me.
No, that is true. You can do whatever you want. You're Home Alone
some people
2
eat,
eating.
Some people eat masala for lunch.
Hey, that's right. Hey, oh, you eat masala for lunch? Hey, what should we call the show? Didn't you write something down at the...
I wrote down Oxamoxa and 50 Shades of Touch of Gray.
What about 50? You also said 50 Shades of Oxamoxa. Should we just do that?
Yeah, 50 Shades of Oxamoxa. I think that's the call.
By the way, they do have an album called Oxamoxa, but it is not the album that has the famous Grateful Dead symbol with the skull and the lightning bolt. That is Steal Your Face. I was doing some research during the show. So there you have it.
You know so much about about the Grateful Dead. It's such a blind spot for me.
I don't even have Okes and Moxa. Like, I don't know why I know that. Like, I just went through a hippie phase. But anyway, I'll take it. Actually, let's go on some Grateful Dead. Wait, hold on. I need you to.
Why not, man?
Yeah, you need to tap dance here for a second. Let me pull this up.
No problem. I'm a little curious because I'm trying to find. I think it's Moxa Moxa. Andrew, is that possible?
What?
Not Okes and Moxa?
The one I'm thinking of is Okes and Moxa, but it's spelled A. I'm sorry, O-A-X, I believe.
Oh, like a Oaxacan thing.
Yeah. That's. In fact, I'll bet you I'm not pronouncing it correctly at all. I just know that because I learned that in eighth grade or something like that.
Right.
I'll bet you $1 million I'm saying it incorrectly now that you say that.
Well, because I've said that a million. I've told the story so many times that I thought Oaxaca was pronounced Oaxaca until my 20s. And I remember seeing a cookbook for Oaxacan food and just thinking, like, man, this Oaxacan thing is really making inroads because everybody was opening Oaxacan restaurants. And then only later did I figure out that it was Oaxaca.
Now, did you say it in front of people that you remember? Like, have you spent the adult part of your life going back wondering how many times you mispronounced that?
No, because what happened was my brain figured it out in a moment. I was at my ex-in-law's house, and they had a Oaxacan cookbook. And there was just something about staring at that word and how much – because do you remember this was like 20 years ago now? Maybe not quite 20, but that like Oaxacan cuisine was just all of a sudden everywhere. Like it was the cool – maybe it wasn't happening in New Hampshire, but like in Seattle and in L.A., that was the really hip kind of food to be making. And somehow my brain just like – it was like almost like a Kaiser Solse moment where I'd been hearing the word Oaxacan or Oaxaca for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd been seeing Oaxacan in places. And my brain just went like, those are the same thing.
Mm-hmm. I had a weird – I shouldn't even say the story because I can't tell the details. But there was a time when I mistook – and I don't even know at what age, but I'm going to say like a very young man, like probably, I don't know, maybe eighth grade or something like that. I think there was a time when I confused a very racist slur with an expression. The most I will say is an expression that meant kind of you're a novice at something. And at one point I realized that I was maybe mixing those two things up because I don't even know how I knew the racist slur, but I don't think I knew it was a racist slur. I don't know. But in my head, and I have, you know how I'll have these moments of like kind of panic about something that I said or did years and years ago? That slipped into my head yesterday or the day before out of the blue, just like, and I still don't know if there was a time that I was going around saying, or even if in one instance said to somebody a out of context racist phrase that would probably confuse anybody who actually knew what it meant. And if I did that, and if that person is walking around still thinking that I'm a racist.
When did that hit you?
It hits me, I don't know, annually. The most recent one was a couple of days ago. Like, this might have been a thought I had yesterday. I don't know. I'm just thinking of it now that, like, these are the types of thoughts. If you want to know what an intrusive thought is like, it can be something that goes back that far, or it can just be some dumb thing that doesn't matter that was just like from literally a conversation you had an hour earlier.
Do you have, we need to go because there's actually there's an all staff meeting.
Yeah.
That we
actually,
should
I
zoom
was slightly
into.
Wrong about that. Yeah. I actually have a little bit more time than I thought, but we should wrap up. Yeah.
But have you found, because I know a lot of the listeners have the same experience that you have about those intrusive thoughts. Have you found any strategies for quieting that down, Jim Beam?
Yeah, you got there before me. No, I don't. As a matter of fact, I was thinking about it yesterday because I was doing dishes at the sink and I was wearing my headphones and I was totally in my own world listening to Comedy Bang Bang and something hit me. I have no idea what it was. It wasn't a big deal. Like literally probably just something I said on the show recently or just remembering stumbling. I don't know what it was, but instead of making this is the noise I'll often make if I get an intrusive thought, like an intake of air, like that. And I did that, and Genevieve was in the other room watching TV, and I pray she didn't hear me, and I did this big intake of air that if you would have overheard me making this sound in an otherwise, to you, silent kitchen, because I'm listening to my headphones, it was like I did this big intake of air that also sounded a little bit like a sob. I heard myself do it, like... something along the lines of that. And it wasn't, whatever I was freaking out about was not a big deal at all. And suddenly I kind of heard it and I was like, oh my God, are my little intrusive thoughts getting a little bit like, this is getting near the edge of like kind of having a nervous tick behavior, you know, like that's not good if you're just like hanging out by yourself and you're suddenly making wailing noises over the sink.
Hmm.
So anyway, yes, this is, I'm dealing with it well. Once I get that new chair, everything's going to be fine.
Absolutely. You're going to be like Arnold Schwarzenegger covered in clay so the predator can't read his body heat chairs.
I'm going to be in the corner hiding from my own chair. Genevieve's going to walk in the studio and I'm going to be covered
in river clay.
Just from top to bottom, but also cowering. I've been holding a rubber band gun and just like just looking at my chair from around the corner of my shelf.
Get to the chopper!
Get to the Aeron! Anyway.
It's the funniest idea of you just trying to skulk around your office and position yourself so you can eventually get into this chair. But full on Arnie from Predator.
Right. I'm more of a jingle all the way kind of guy. All right, we'll go out with Box of Rain by the Grateful Dead.
All right. By the way, you might not have been wrong on... how did you say the...
I was saying Oksa-moksa because that's how I said it as a...
I think you might be right. Really? It says it's a nonsensical palindrome.
Oh, okay.
The title of the album is a palindrome created by cover artist Rick Griffin. It's pronounced Oksa-moksa.
Oh, so I was wrong, but...
Well, you were close.
At least I wasn't like, you know, bastardizing a language.
And you didn't say a racial slur. I think that's probably the most important.
I'll go back. I'll listen to the whole show and make sure that's true.
Andrew, why are you sobbing in the kitchen? Nothing, just reviewing TBTL. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio. Thanks to all of you keeping us in business, and we mean that. Until then, please try to enjoy your Tuesday. Please stay safe. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other's. And also, please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Walk out of any doorway. Feel your way. Feel your way like the day before. Maybe you'll find direction around some corner where it's been waiting to meet you.
Power out.